Welcome back to our explorations of the laws of life. Tonight we're focusing on the divine law of compensation. And the question is, what is the divine law of compensation? And how can an aspirant best harness it? I've shuffled the cards. Those of you who can see my screen will see the result. The spread is as follows. The starting point is the Three of Cups, right side up. The counterpoint is the Ace of Swords, upside down. The challenge is the Moon, right side up. The Moon is number 18 in the Major Arcana, making it a 9. And here's another 9 down here in the Purpose. The 9 of Pentacles, upside down. The Moon was right side up. The endowment is the 10 of Pentacles, upside down. The 10 becomes a 1. The destiny is the Queen of Cups, right side up. Over in the Pillar of Revelation, we have the real question is the 8 of Cups, upside down. The hidden forces is the High Priestess, right side up. The spiritual ideal is the Queen of Swords, upside down. And the culmination is the 7 of Cups, upside down. So we have 4 upright cards and 6 reverse cards. We have 2 majors being the Moon and the High Priestess. We have 2 swords. We have no rods, 4 cups, and 2 pentacles. The cups imply fullness, compensation, and so that's understandable. You fill the cup, and through our activities on Earth, we create our compensation. So before we get going, I want to preface this with the statement that the law of compensation is a subset of the law of consequences, which in turn is a subset of the law of cause and effect. So much of what we are examining here will apply to those laws as well. But the important, and this is an important but, the law of compensation deals with the interface between the finite and the infinite. Our finite actions produce infinite compensation, and that's, you can't understand compensation in finite terms, is what I'm trying to say here. You have to understand it in terms of the infinite, the abstract, the unlimited. The moment we, and this is one of the problems, one of the classic statements of the law of compensation is an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a cheek for a cheek, et cetera, et cetera. I might have embellished that a little bit. And people have gotten themselves into a whole lot of trouble by interpreting that finitely. So if somebody gouges out their eyes, they go and gouge out their eyes and say, I'm justified in doing that, law, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. It doesn't work that way. What this is saying is that the abstract mind of God is a whole in its entirety. And it's infinite, it's abstract, and whenever anything happens within the range of creation, finite event, it tends to throw out of balance the equilibrium of the complete whole. And so this is all right there in the Three of Cups if you're looking for it. But in the big buttercup or whatever, sunflower, is the whole. And they have their individual cups. So we tend to personalize this and say, well, where's my compensation for a job well done? Or we try to understand finite events like tornadoes in Oklahoma or shootings in Connecticut. And there's no way we're going to make sense out of these things because there's no finite answer to that. But the law of compensation works thus that whatever we do creates a vortex that whenever the time is right, we enjoy the opportunity that we've created. If we've acted in mean-spirited, malicious ways, our opportunity will be to fall on our knees and beg for mercy. If we have acted in generous, good-hearted ways and helped other people, we will get all kinds of opportunities for growth and development. But it won't happen right now. You won't be able to see, in most cases, unless you're highly intuitive, a direct line connection between finite events where you can say, this is my compensation for that. And one of the charming things, as many of you have discovered, about the book, The Boy Who Saw True, is that from time to time, as the boy, especially as an adult, speculated on why somebody had such rotten karma, his master would step in and say, well, it's because he burnt babies when he was, 10 lifetimes ago. And now he's got this terrible, incurable disease. Well, so a master can show you that link, but it still has to be seen in terms of the abstract and the infinite. This is the problem of anything that happens in the finite world, is that our finite mind, and that's why there are no rods here, we have to interpret this intuitively or not at all. And we can't, this is not a tit for a tat kind of arrangement here. It's a opportunity. Everything we do generates opportunities in the future. The more noble it is and the more it's connected with divine life, the better off it is. Okay, so having said this, let's get right away to a couple of observations. First of all, notice that the Three of Cups, our starting point, there's the three sisters here, probably the Fates or the Graces, who knows. But there's this great big sunflower behind them, the sunflower standing in as representative of the sun. And then the card right above that is one of two majors, and it's the moon. And then we have the moon again represented in the real question, the Eight of Cups. And we have the moon here up in the sky, the same crescent moon. So the moon reflects the sun. So in a lot of ways, compensation is a reflection of what we've done in activity. Not what we've thought, not what we've emoted, but what we've actually accomplished, helping other people or being a pain in the butt, one way or the other. And so we're looking here at the reflection of the finite into the abstract and then a reflection back into a future lifetime or later on in this lifetime, but a distinct moment in time. So we're reflecting the larger whole in finite events and vice versa. In order to maintain equilibrium, see, the problem is if you do anything at all, if you drop a pebble in the pond, you're responsible for what happens as a result of that. And if it radiates out and brings good fortune to other people, then you reap the benefit of that good fortune. If it overflows the spillway and washes out a city below, you have that responsibility. So there would be no way to connect finite events with the overall bigger picture except through the law of compensation, which reflects physical events in the ether or the cosmos, and then at the proper time. This doesn't require any notebooks or archival records or anything, but at the proper time, when conditions are ripe, it's reflected back out and takes the form of an opportunity to grow or to mature. Now, this is an important point because it speaks directly to the meaning of life. You're all familiar with this concept, you just don't know it. On page 113 in The Art of Living, Volume 1, in our essay, Finding Meaning in Life, we write, we're talking about blessing here. We are often unaware of how justly our needs are fulfilled by the universal connection. But they are. When we cry out for strength, life gives us problems to solve. Compensation, you see. We cry out for strength. We want to grow. We want to serve. And so life puts us down in the ideal conditions for nurturing that. When we seek wisdom, we receive perplexing situations to interpret. These struggles, when courageously met, help us overcome our weaknesses and fulfill our obligations. And so it is quite realistic to bless these circumstances and the people involved as a means of releasing further healing and building energies to work with. We can be thankful for these difficulties because of the valuable lessons we've learned from them. And so this is the law of compensation, where we see the germ of growth, or maybe we don't even see it, but we benefit from the germ of growth within a situation and meeting it. And, of course, the essay goes on and says, we should therefore bless those who hate and condemn us, for they teach us forgiveness, stamina, and faith in ourselves. We should bless those who deceive us, for they teach us discernment and the value of honesty. We should bless those who almost run us off the road, because they show us how good we are at responding to signs of danger. We should bless those who act ignorant. That wasn't in the essay, by the way. Just speaking from this afternoon's experience. So this goes on. This is the principle here, that especially in the process of growing and maturing as a spiritual aspirant, we're often expected to endure conditions that the average person would not need to endure. And you might say, well, where's the payoff? I've endured this sickness. I've nursed my loved one back to health, and he, she, or it doesn't show any signs of appreciation. Where's my payoff? Where's the compensation? Dear God, when is it my turn? Mm-hmm. Well, you see, that's over-personalizing this principle. This principle works automatically, connecting the abstract with the finite. But often the compensation for being such a good, wonderful person lies in future opportunities that then other people don't get. The opportunity to get a good education, the opportunity to invest, as Carnegie did when he was a young man, in a steel mill that was about to get a contract for the Pennsylvania Railroad and make him a lot of money. Opportunities come like that, not out of the blue, but as a result of this law of compensation at work. And so we have to stretch our minds here a little bit to understand this. So in any event, we have the starting point is the Three of Cups. This is the big sunflower, the 800-pound sunflower in the room concept here. And in the foreground, the three ladies, the three goddesses, the three graces, whatever they might be, toasting one another, creating a triangle here. And this basically emphasizes the fact that everything, every form, is part of a larger whole that we call life, creation. And this larger complex system called creation always seeks to maintain equilibrium, lest it start to rotate on its axis and fall apart. So this is the relationship between specific events, finite details, trivial aspects of life, and the big picture. And so as you're contemplating the law of compensation, you need to ask, how has the bigger picture been become unbalanced, and what will be necessary to balance it? So the idea of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, is if if somebody comes along and steals something from another person, then that has to be compensated somewhere along the line, directly or indirectly. And it will be. The mind of God is designed, the laws of life are carefully designed to, as I said, reflect this from the ethers back into the first available slot. It's not that there's a bunch of angels in the inner dimensions keeping notes and checking it twice. It's a question that this is an automatic function of divine intelligence. And so this is the way, as I indicated, that opportunity is formed. It's also the way that we have to face the consequences of our actions, even if we don't recognize the direct connective link. One can presume that the people who were affected by the Oklahoma tornadoes this afternoon were carrying around some form of abuse. They mistreated other people in earlier lives, or they scorned Mother Nature. Never kick sand in Mother Nature's face. It's not a good idea, because she can respond with a mile-wide tornado, which will kick sand in your face. And so it's important to understand that you can say, well, that doesn't sound very merciful. Well, the first thing to understand about a big picture like that is that God didn't ask any of these people to build their homes in Tornado Alley in Oklahoma. They may not have had much of an option on that score, but the point is that it's foolish for human beings to blame God for allowing tornadoes and volcanoes and other natural phenomena to occur and wipe out whole cities when we're the ones that built the cities. And there's a certain amount of humility that's needed here, and a recognition that if anybody who is without, one never has to, under the law of compensation, if you have only done good and made a great sacrifice to your own comfort and well-being, and you have done no harm, a tornado you would never be in the path of a tornado. You would not choose to build in the path of a tornado, maybe a hurricane, but not a tornado. Now, the point is that this is a reflective process. The bigger picture would never let you end up in the path of a disaster unless you had some kind of a compensation to make. And again, the people who are, it is said of some people that they're born with a silver spoon. Well, you know, you can be born with a silver spoon and gag on it, which it would not be good karma, or you can be born with a silver spoon and have all kinds of great opportunity. The people who enjoy the latter are people who are getting their just compensation for earlier heroic and valorous deeds. So we need to see this at work and appreciate the beauty with which this occurs and unfolds, and the automatic nature of it as we carry the memories of our earlier achievements and indiscretions with us. We reflect out of the abstract mind of God the correct opportunities. So, idea here is we're dealing with the intersection of forces. The Three of Cups, they're toasting some higher purpose, the sunflower or whatever, with their cups of mead or joy juice or whatever it is. And this is this is part of the natural management of energies. We can't rewrite our history in order to avoid any compensation, benevolent or otherwise, but we can learn to take it in stride and make the most out of it and learn to work with the laws of life intelligently. Okay, so that's the Three of Cups. Then we come to the counterpoint, the Ace of Swords. And the Ace of Swords is this sword stuck in the ground. And from this loosening of the soil, two perfect flowers grow up, perfectly pure, perfectly white. And they're growing out of the residue of ancient evil in the soil. So what this says to me is that everything that happens to us or we do to life during our physical life is finite. And our life is made up of finite moments in time strewn over a number of years. And these events or deeds or activities, even though they're finite, they're related to the fabric, the bigger picture of our life, the soul's plan, and the deviation from the soul's plan. And so this is the medium through which we create opportunity. And so we have these two functions together, the Three of Cups, the coming together of the bigger picture and the finite, and then here the emphasis on the finite. We come up to the purpose, or the creative challenge, I mean, and we have the moon. The moon is a celestial orb that has no life of its own, but reflects the light of the sun, and has a tremendous magnetic capacity to affect the tides of Earth, the tides of events, the tides of thinking and emotion in the human being. And so this is again demonstrating how this principle of the bigger picture works, the principle of compensation works. This has nothing, again, let me emphasize, I'm not talking about the type of compensation where you work for $6 an hour and you get paid for the number of hours you put in. That's a finite compensation for finite activity. This is translating our finite investments in life, or what we've taken out of life, being reflected in the mind of God, in the higher patterns of compensation, and creating future opportunity for us. Creates a matrix that then is reflected back at the proper time, and we get an opportunity, we get a good education, we meet good friends who support us and take care of us, whatever it might be, the opportunity to learn and grow. Dare I say, even the opportunity to take courses from a teacher. Of course, this law governs why you're all stuck with me. So I'm offering these ideas in all humility. But, I'll leave it up to you as to whether this is good karma or bad karma for you. But it's part of the law of compensation. There are people, of course, who are never satisfied with anything, and so they read our books or they take our classes and they say, well, I was looking for something better. And so they're never satisfied, and they fail to take advantage of the opportunity that they had earned in an earlier span of time. Then we come down to the purpose, and we have the Nine of Pentacles. This is our second nine because the moon was a nine as well. And the nine is, of course, a number of initiation. And so this is very definitely tied in with the whole concept of opportunity. The law of compensation is the divine law to master in order to learn how to create opportunity. You want to start a school, you want to open up a new chapter in your career, whatever. You want to find a new and enriching relationship. You do all these things by working with the law of compensation intelligently. And you create, you invoke opportunities which will fulfill the inner design and plan of the soul. Here we have the Nine of Pentacles. We have the average aspirant here with her pet bird, the bird of paradise, whatever it is, and in the background, and they're pretty much touching nose to beak, beak to nose. And in the background is this tree symbolizing the tree of life, grapes growing lower on the vine. So we have here the bigger picture of growth, the lesser picture of maturity, and the more finite picture of attractiveness, attraction between the individual and the bird, the pet. And so this is the completion of a circle. You can almost see a circle formed by the bird and then going down all those chakras in the individual, all those pentacles, creates kind of a swirl, circle. And it's, this is through our love of the work we do, our investments in life, the great way to operate, to activate the law of compensation is to be constantly investing in life itself, investing in ways that honor these principles of growth, maturity, and attraction. And if we do that, then we open up all kinds of new vistas, and we will always be able to access the full power of the abstract mind as we need greater opportunities. If we, on the other hand, are miserly and highly personal in our focus and constantly looking for an advantage over other people, then we throw things out of balance. That's the whole key here. If our three women in the Three of Cups have come together and one of them is secretly saying, I'm going to figure out how to pit Maud here against Edith and drive a wedge between them, and I'll be the benefactor of that, then she's invoking disaster for herself. And it's highly personal and highly finite. And the finite implodes upon itself, as you've heard me say many times. On the other hand, if she's approaching the triangle here saying, what can I do to strengthen this relationship? What can I do to express the beauty of the sunflower through everything the three of us do or does, everything that we do, then she's harnessing the law of compensation correctly. So again, this is the case of enriching the personality and of recognizing that what we may view as disaster may very well be our finest moment of contribution. The key here lies in the endowment, the card of endowment, the Ten of Pentacles. And the Ten of Pentacles is a man and a woman facing the castle on the hill, and their little child is with them, but turning and looking back to the past, looking back towards the finite. So here's a vision of the spiritual ideal that the masculine and feminine aspects of our consciousness can behold and can inspire us, but there's always a part of us that is seeking to remain involved in the finite life. That's the child. That's the growing element within us. So again, the key to harnessing this law is to constantly seek to serve the ideal, seek to serve the plan of the soul, seek to serve the master, the hierarchy, whatever it might be. And indeed, this is the law of compensation is inextricably intertwined with the law of sacrifice. That as we step onto the spiritual path and become aware of the ideal and the guidance of the soul on the ashram, the city on the hill, we are often called upon to one of the tests is, will we volunteer to forego our comfort and our rest and forfeit our peace in order to strive and attain our perfection or our status? And if we are, then what we're doing is deferring compensation. We have, if we've done something good and helpful for others, if we've rushed into a burning house and saved somebody's life, we have a right to compensation from life itself. But many people on the spiritual path find it at that point, they're given the option of, well, you can, of course, be rewarded for this, or you can turn right around and volunteer to rush into other burning houses and save other people. And let me show you how this is done. Blah, 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 blah. That's, it's kind of like reward. Stalwart. The main character in the Dave Duncan series that I've been telling you about, the King's Daggers. He has a glorious triumph in book one, and then the king says, well, I'm ready to bestow all kinds of honors upon you, but if you just wait a few short weeks and do something else for me, we need you to go undercover, and if you've been awarded all these things, you won't be able to do that. So he says, oh, all right. And he makes that sacrifice. Well, this is symbolic of the spiritual path, and we're often asked to forego our peace and contentment and our rewards and our abundance that we've richly earned and postpone our reward. And as DK explains it, quite often the law of compensation is put into pralaya for a while, put into a rest mode, a holding mode, but eventually it starts to seep into the disciple's life, and suddenly all kinds of opportunities open up, and it's almost like, well, it's like in The Boy Who Saw True. He was not born on the wrong side of the tracks. He was born into a family that would enable him to pursue his adult life without having to work. So that's the result of that was compensation for work done earlier. But at that time, he may have felt that he wasn't being justly rewarded for his great sacrifices by life itself. That's always an illusion. And of course, that's what we come up with here as we head towards the fulfillment. The Seven of Cups is the card of illusion, of glamour. So there's a lot of glamour that surrounds the law of compensation and its twin, the law of sacrifice. The thing to keep in mind is that sacrifice is the process of making life sacred, of blessing the finite with the infinite. And so as long as we're focused on the ideal, we will make the right kinds of decisions. But if we try to direct this to gain advantage over people, we will suffer the consequences. This leads us then to the card of destiny, the Queen of Cups. The Queen of Cups is one of my favorite cards. This is a mature woman, a queen, obviously. And she's radiating wisdom and light from her head. And it is so powerful, it fills her entire torso with light. And she is a point of radiant light in her world. And she's the embodiment of compassion. and is by nature and by temperament, she nurtures the growth in other people. This is the ultimate ideal of sacrifice, not that we give things up, but that we learn to be constantly radiating compassion and goodwill, benevolence for the benefit of everyone, not just ourselves, but for everyone, behaving in altruistic ways that embrace the larger picture. So the more we take the vision of the ideal and understand that this is a comprehensive inner tapestry, a bigger picture that guides all that we do, the rest of this comes automatically. So, again, let me pause at this point. We've now gone through the first six cards. Any comments or questions before I move on? Anybody?
Carl, it seems to me that when you continue to strive and compensation is deferred and deferred, you eventually would reach a higher plane where you're serving, and I could just see that radiating out to humanity or to on such a wider level than if you were compensated at the beginning, like when you first did something.
Sure.
I don't know if it made any sense right now, but I guess I was seeing that in my mind.
Well, this is what we'll talk about in the Pillar of Revelation. And so let's see whether I answer that or address that issue. Anybody else? Okay, well, let's go on to the Pillar of Revelation and then we can chat at the end. The seventh card is the Eight of Cups. The seventh card, of course, is the position of the real question. So I'm going to mute because there seems to be some feedback here. The Eight of Cups is a hunchback cloaked figure with some kind of a rod or a staff. He's confronting a river. We don't know whether there's a ferry coming over to get him or whether he's going to swim or just walk across the river. But he's got all these cups here, which would be his kind of like promissory notes for all the good he's done. And there's two ways to interpret this. Either he's reluctant to give them up, or he's letting his possessions hold him back from crossing the river, or he recognizes that those are worthwhile sacrifices to move beyond, and that he will actually take that with him, that compensation is something that we take with us as an abstract element that can pop down into our physical lives, our finite lives, in the most unexpected and delightful of ways. And so this is all, he's a individual, but he's reaching a stage of impersonality. And the law of compensation works only in that level of impersonality. If we're trying to focus in our person and say, I'm owed this, then we'll probably find out what else we're owed as well. And we may not like some of that as much because we tend to remember the debt society has to us, not the debts we have to society. And so it's better to indeed let the balance accrue in our favor. But the more important thing here is that crossing that river is something that he would consider to be impossible. And it is impossible as long as he lets what he thinks life owes him dictate his point of view. But if he's able to understand the abstract workings of the law of compensation, he can defer that and release that and say, what is important to me is how I'm expressing the ideal plan. And so He moves, he lets go of his possessiveness and strives toward the goal. And what is our favorite catechism?
Play my part.
Yeah, that one. Mm-hmm. How does it go?
I play
my part with stern reserve, with earnest aspiration. I look above, I help below. Well, we've already seen that. I look above is the bigger picture of the Three of Cups, or the moon, or in this case, the moon again. I help below would be the Queen of Cups, or the Nine of Pentacles. I look above, I help below.
Dream not.
I dream not, nor I
rest. I toil, I serve,
I reap, I pray. I am the cross, I am the way. Here he is the way, and he treads upon the work he does. And that's the essence of sacrifice here. Our sacrifice is what holds us on the finite earth and gives us a focus point by which we can inject or invest spirit into our life and through that into the life beyond. And as long as we're doing that with the compassion and the benevolence of the Queen of Cups, we'll be okay. So the question is, what are we foregoing? What are we relinquishing? What are we sacrificing? What must we leave behind us so that we can move into the future? And what can we invest in life to enrich its meaning and its, and to add more of what we know about spirit into our life, our surroundings, our sphere of influence? And in these simple ways, we harness the infinite. We then move on to the next card, which is in the eighth card, and is the position of unseen resources, hidden factors. And we have the High Priestess. And here we have, in the distance, the exact same city on the hill that the people in the Ten of Pentacles are studying. And she has pulled back the veil to reveal this inner dimension. But she's focusing all that represents into the flower and butterfly that she's holding in her hand and blessing them, enriching the focus of her attention with divine qualities to help nurture and impel growth. So the law of compensation is all about growth and stimulating growth on earth. And as we do that, we are richly rewarded, if not this moment in time, in some future time when it'll be even more appropriate and more beneficial. So we understand this about the mind of God and the divine laws of creation, and we let it work. We don't have to interpose ourselves to force it to work. We don't have to throw a temper tantrum and say, I want what is owed me now. I want it now. We can simply let it work, knowing that it'll always work to our best advantage. Then we come to the spiritual ideal, which is the Queen of Swords. The Queen of Swords is very much like the Queen of Cups, except that she's got a sword instead of a cup. And this card here, as the spiritual ideal, represents the force of blessing or beatitude, which I've already alluded to. So she's transferring spiritual force from the abstract into the finite focus of life, redeeming triviality, giving it meaning and significance, and transforming, giving importance to the details of life. And that's the spiritual ideal here of enriching the personality, enriching life. We must do it with a impersonal attitude. We're not doing this because we are playing favorites with our pet as it might seem in the Nine of Pentacles. We're doing this because this is the ideal plan. It's the ideal design of the soul. It's what the soul expects us to do. Then we come to the last card, the culmination, which is the Seven of Cups. This is, I've already hinted at the meaning of it, is one of, it's a little puzzling being here as the culmination, because it is a card of glamour. And it suggests that we spin a lot of wheels and waste a lot of time looking for finite compensation instead of abstract compensation. Not understanding that if we let the treasures of heaven be our reward, as the Christ put it, we will be far better off than if we demand specific compensation. And this is just a general principle of life. If somebody feels that they've been hurt and insulted by another person and they sue them for damages, they'll get a finite payoff for the damages, but they may miss out on a much wider payoff if they had simply focused on enriching life. So we have the Seven of Cups. It's real tempting to look for a glamorous payoff, to look for fame or wealth or things of this nature rather than the treasures of heaven. But what's in store for us if we work with sacrifice and nurturing compassion and detachment, the impersonal life, what is in store for us are the genuine treasures of spirit that tend to come in terms of rich opportunity. Is we're very seldom paid off in kind, where somebody approaches us on the street and says, here's $10,000 in Kruger Rands. I don't need them anymore, but I know you do. It seldom happens that way. We have an opportunity to start some new career or new project, and that develops into something quite fruitful, and we get our reward by working at this and seizing the opportunity. So this is really a law that touches on the key to creating opportunity. I'm going to stop there, which seems like a logical place to stop, and entertain comments and questions. Did I answer your question, Mimi? Oh, I need to unmute. All right. Hold on. All right, everybody's unmuted.
Yeah, that seems to do it.
Okay.
I guess I'm looking at the structure on the cover of the Dion Fortune Through the Gates of Death, and it's that scaffolding that rises all to our attention, and it seems to represent this as far as what we're building. And it's almost like this dome-shaped thing that at some point it's just going to start to rain back on us, you know?
Well, I think that's
further.
I think that's further. Yes. I think that's it's kind of like the honeycomb effect. The bees go out and they bring back pollen and whatnot and store it in the hive, and it becomes nectar. It's turned into honey, and that's stored for the use of the hive as a whole. What we have here is a principle that unites us with humanity as a whole, and it far transcends the individual. The individual is sometimes the focal point of a great act of heroism or benevolence or philanthropy or something. And of course that will bring in accurate or full compensation. But the real compensation generally occurs in terms of the opportunity of a group of people. For example, something that Rose and I have often talked about one aspect of our compensation in living is the fact that we live here in North Georgia, and 10 miles from us is Gibbs Garden that you've heard me talk about. And this is an incredible expression of beauty that was made possible by the creative genius of Jim Gibbs. And he spent 30 some years cultivating this. And it's an ongoing project. It's not stagnant in any way. But that's part of the opportunity to be, or for example, the opportunity to be one of the founding fathers would be a compensation for many, many experiences and contributions in the past. The opportunity to be part of a dramatic turnaround in human history, to play a part in the Renaissance, to be present at the signing of the Magna Carta, whatever it might be. These are transcendent experiences that only a few people can touch. And yet, the people who, for example, divine healing of mind and body. Think about the compensation that represented to the members of that audience, the people who were handpicked to be able to listen to the Christ reappear through the mediumship of Murdo MacDonald Bain and deliver those talks. We're blessed, we're enriched simply by reading the books. You can imagine how enriching that was to be there in person. Well, that's a form of compensation for having tread the spiritual path and not made too much of a fuss. When am I going to get paid for this? When am I going to get a reward? Here I've been expecting it, and it's always been deferred. I gotta go incognito. How much longer? You see, the personality can make cases like that, but life itself is not designed that way. Life is designed to reward the efforts we make and the contributions we make. Other comments or questions?
Carl, I was just looking at, there's so many women in the cards, the priestess, the two queens.
The three sisters.
The three sisters, and I was thinking of the receptivity, whether it's your own life of being open and receptive to whatever and realizing through this reading, which I think this is like a poem in your pocket. You want to keep all these cards and look at that whenever you're going through something that you're not happy with. But also the receptivity then in the compensation that it's there. And you know that we are being invited to celebrate life and to become as much as we can become.
And right. Well, that's a very good point. The dominance of the feminine images in the cards, it reinforces the fact that there are no rods here. We're talking about something that can only be perceived intuitively. And often, the key to perceiving the genuine compensation is to be able to intuitively discern it. Even if you don't remember how you earned it or why it's justified that you're getting this, it's something that has to be discerned intuitively, because you have to start by seeing that huge sunflower in the Three of Cups. If you can't see that, if you don't understand what the central sun of your life is, then you won't understand the reflection of it in the physical plane. So this is definitely a function of the intuition to be able to discern the forces of compensation as they enter your life and not try to make it too literal, too much of a eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth kind of thing. That principle does work, but it works only through the abstract mind of God and through his creation. It doesn't work in our human imaginations. So we're not very good judges of what compensation should be. that are stalwart. Anybody else? Any other comments, questions, observations? Anybody? Well, that's it for tonight. I want to thank you all. And we'll do this again in a couple of weeks. So have a good couple of weeks working with the law of compensation, and we'll pursue our further understanding in the next session. Thank you. Good night.